Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on making money with hard money right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he had to say to the New York Press Association on February 26, 1936. He said, "There is no such thing as a free and independent press in America, unless it's in some country town. And there is not one of you who dares to express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper, like Othello, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are, he said, the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes." Unquote. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, and so on. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and the New World Order, just call and order my 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours right now. Call direct, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're in the midst of a series of programs on Franklin Sanders' workbook, a workbook that he sent out the other day. Of course, it goes out to his subscribers. It's $49, $5 shipping and handling, $54, and it's titled, "Why Silver Will Outperform Gold by 400%. And it's a workbook or a manual for bimetallists. Now, if you're a normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety kind of guy, and you don't buy into gold and silver or hard money, that's fine. No problem there. This book probably isn't for you. Now, on the other hand, if you have thought about or you have bought gold and silver, some of the questions that come to my desk or come across my desk are, why should I buy gold and silver? Because it doesn't draw interest. And the answer to that is, interest is illegal anyway. And gold and silver does make a profit because of the wild variations or volatility in gold and silver markets. And that's what we're discussing. How to make a profit in hard money. And the way it's done is you trade gold for silver when the market is favorable for the trade, and then you trade the silver for the gold when the market is favorable for the silver-gold trade. I've been doing that for many years. Franklin Sanders has. There's a few of us that have been doing this for many years, and nobody ever wrote a book. Of course, why should I? There's no money in it for me. Sanders is a money changer. He is a a broker, and I'm not, so I'm not here to sell gold and silver. And you can do this with any broker. You don't have to do it with Franklin Sanders. Any broker can trade your gold for silver or silver for gold. You can do it in futures, stocks. There's a number of ways to do it. And the bottom line is simply this, that when the price of gold goes up, and right now the price of gold is around $430 an ounce, spot price, and the price of silver is around $738.39 the other day, I saw the numbers. And there's a ratio between the two. So it's that ratio that moves up and down. And as that ratio moves up and down over a period of time, just like stocks and bonds, you know, you look at the stock and bond market and those numbers move, and it's the movement in these numbers where the profitability is. And then we don't take our profit in dollars, we take our profit in ounces, weights and measures, just weights and measures, which is what God requires. And that way you're not in violation of the law of God and you're making a tidy profit. The suggested movement times are about when it's advantageous for you to take a 20 or 25% profit, that's the time to make your move. Don't wait until the market, you know, rises to the top or rises to the bottom. You just take your profits every time the market shifts or moves. And over a period of time, you'll double your number of ounces, and then you'll double it again, and then you'll double it again. And that's the way money is made. You see, you've heard the old adage that says it takes money to make money. Well, money is made from investment, not labor. Hard work is a valuable asset, and it's a valuable commodity out here in the marketplace. But laborers work hard, but they never make a lot of money. Donald Trump does not make money by labor. He makes money by investment. It's buying low and selling high. That's where the money's at. It's in buying, selling, and trading, not in labor. An old guy told me one time, he says, it's advantageous to work hard, but it's also more advantageous to work smart. Now let's take a look at the physical ratio. We've been talking about this thing of the ratio of silver and gold. Let's understand it. And I want to point out that at the bottom of every page is footnotes. And the footnotes give you the vital information that you need to understand how money works. Americans are woefully ignorant about money and monetary policy. People were more knowledgeable about money and monetary policy back in the 1700s than they are today. But of course, they weren't sent to public schools in 1750. They've been sent to public schools since 1900. And we've suffered from a deliberate dumbing down of America, and as a result of that, we don't understand terms like ratio or puts, calls, shorts, premiums, or discounts. These are terms that are used in the money markets, stocks, bonds, gold, silver. The average guy doesn't understand them, and he doesn't get involved in them. And of course, he goes out and he works, and he gets robbed in taxes by his government, and he gets robbed by inflation through the use of unjust weights and balances, Federal Reserve notes, mortgages, and commercial paper. So here's the physical ratio. Sanders says, I've seen wildly differing estimates of the physical ratio of gold to silver in the Earth's crust. Well, what difference does it make? Well, simply this. For 4,000 years, the ratio ranged from 2.5 to 1 to 16 to 1, and most of that time it remained within a tighter range, namely 8 to 12 to 1. It was only after Columbus in 1492 did the ratio move above 13 to 1. And the best explanation of this amazingly steady exchange rate would seem to be found in the relative occurrence of gold and silver in the Earth's crust. And silver seems to have been 10 or 12 times as abundant as gold. But over the years, I found that the ratio given as low as 10 to 1 and as high as 40 to 1, but usually it's around 12 to 1. So I asked a friend and subscriber who is also a mining engineer, and he finally turned up some definitive data. In the American Geological Institute data sheets for geology in the field, laboratory and office, third edition, compiled by J.T. Dutrow, we find the concrete answer. It is, according to the AGI data sheet, 57:1, or 57.1, I should say, abundance of elements. And then it says, on average, silver occurs at 0.07 parts per million and gold at 0.004 parts per million in the Earth's crust. Thus, the naturally occurring ratio is 17.5:1. Interesting. That's not very far from the last official monetary ratio, 16:1, set when both gold and silver were still universal money in the 19th century. In 1834 for the United States. Now, never forget that the year-by-year industry consumes silver, while most of the gold that's ever been mined still sits in a vault or hangs around somebody's neck. Now, that industrial consumption has, for 100 years and more, put steady downward pressure on this ratio. Chart 3, Silver Use by Category, on page 16A, shows this in spades. Now, I want to also point out that in this manual, there are a number of pages that deal with charts and graphs. When you look at the ratio of gold and silver in the monetary system from 1787 to the Silver War, it remains flat at under 16:1. After the Civil War, or after silver was demonetized in 1873, I guess I should start there, the price or the ratio of silver and gold begins to vary wildly. Now remember, gold and silver should be valued against one another by weight. The bankers got into the picture in 1873 and they lobbied Congress to demonetize silver, which Congress did, so that they could push paper money. And after all, paper money is where the profit's at. And that's why it's important that you take paper silver and paper gold. And when you do that, you inflate the price of both, because there's only 2,400 tons of gold mined per year. And by selling this paper gold, the bankers, the brokers, the smart money, they have persuaded the people of America, and indeed around the world, that the best way to hold gold is to have a paper certificate that shows that they've got a claim on this gold in a vault. That's the old line that they sold us when they sold the Federal Reserve. You shouldn't have this gold and silver in your pocket, in your own grubby little fist. We want to take this and put it in Fort Knox, and then you can have a claim on it. Put it in the bank where it's safe. So little by little, Americans have been trained that it's not good for you to have physical possession. Now, I pointed out in the programs past in the series that the only way to hold gold and silver is in physical possession. I get called quite often about that. So let me just tell you, if you don't have the gold in your grubby little fist, you don't have gold. Now, the historical ratio, according to Nobel laureate and historian Milton Friedman, the major monetary metal in history is silver, not gold. Now, that's Milton Friedman. The major monetary metal in history is silver, not gold. When you look in the Bible, you'll see that's exactly it. Silver was used for money. Now, major transactions are done in gold, but your daily transactions are done in silver. So when you go to buy a house, you should have some gold coin. But when you go to buy a loaf of bread, you need silver. Now, thanks to our historical and monetary ignorance, very few of us understand silver's monetary predominance throughout history. And you get a flavor of that from the number of languages where the very word for money is either silver or some silver coin, such as dinero or plata, denier, dirham or argent. So the relative rarity in the Earth's crust will not settle the issue absolutely, but it certainly is persuasive with items as similar physically as gold and silver. Now, if I could show you a graph of the gold-silver ratio for the last 4,500 years, and if each foot of the graph stood for a century, only at the last 15 inches would the graph ever climb above 16:1. and only in the last 5 feet, since about 1500, would the ratio ever climb above 13 to 1. For most of its 45 feet, the ratio would be contained between 2.5 and 12 to 1. You'll see that in Table 1, the gold-silver ratio from antiquity on page 17a. Let me show you a little something here. I'll give you a couple, three numbers here. In 3200 BC, the ratio was 2.5 to 1. In 2700 BC, 9 to 1. Hammurabi in Mesopotamia, 2700 BC, 6 to 1. Egypt, 1000 BC, it's 10 to 1. Lydia, 550 BC, 13.33 to 1. Under Darius, the father of Xerxes, 13 to 1. Plato, 445 BC, 12 to 1. Now, let's show you what happens after, oh, say, 1700. In 1700, it's 15 to 1. 1800, 15 to 1. 1821 to 40, 15.3 to 1. In 1871 to 80, it hits 16.7 to 1. It continues to rise until in 1932, it's 75 to 1, and in 1941, it hits 100 to 1. It takes 100 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. Now remember, the correct price is 17.5 to 1. Historically, the monetary policies of the United States is fixed it at 16 to 1. Now, let's pause here and let me show you something. When the ratio hits 100 to 1, three times in the 20th century, it has swung back to 16 to 1. That is, 16 ounces buys 1 ounce of gold. 1941, 1919, and 1980 are the 3 years that that occurred. Now, can you see the profit potential? Let's suppose that you've got money, or you've got purchasing power, you've got labor, whatever it is that you've got, and you buy 100 ounces of silver. Now, that 100 ounces of silver will buy 1 ounce of gold. That's the ratio. So you want to buy silver when the ratio is high. Now, when the silver ratio moves down to 16 to 1, you convert that to gold, because now 16 ounces of silver buys 1 ounce of gold. So if you took 100, divided that by 16, you make 600%. It's 625%. What you do here is you multiply your holdings by six times. Now that you've got the gold, you hang on to the gold until the ratio moves up. So when the ratio moves up to 100, you take 1 ounce of gold and you buy 100 ounces of silver. And you just hang on to the silver until the ratio goes back to 16. Now, that only happens three times in 100 years. So if you want to wait 33 years and then make your cash transaction, that's fine. Now, most of us don't wait 33 years. We wait 5 years or 10 years, something on that order. Let me show you what happened here. I wasn't alerted to silver and gold when I was a kid. Nobody ever told me anything about it. I was born in the era of paper. I was born under communism, and I was trained as a communist and practiced communism from the time I was born until about 1978. And it was in 1978 that I woke up and said, my gosh, I'm practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I think I'll make a change. Well, by 1980, we hit the end of the silver and gold bull market, which began in 1960. And so silver hit $50 an ounce in 1980, and the ratio dropped to 16 to 1. That was the time to cash out. When silver hit $50 an ounce or $35 or whatever, you took your profit. And then I started buying silver at $15 an ounce, and I've been a net buyer of silver over the last 25 years. That's what I've made my savings in. So I could have paid my money into Social Security, but I dropped out of Social Security in 1978, and the amount of money that I would have paid in had I stayed in the workplace and been out here working, I would have paid in another $140,000. So instead of buying $140,000 worth of Social Security retirement, or 401ks, I bought silver. Now it's just about time to cash out in the other direction, isn't it? As we see the ratio dropping, and it hasn't reached the bottom yet. When the next big bull market peak occurs, is the time to sell and convert that to gold. And that's the simplicity of the program. It's no big mystery. Now the devil is in the details, as they say. So that's where Franklin Sanders' book comes in, and I want to give you the name and address. Sanders prints a newsletter, and then I put it's a monthly newsletter, an economics newsletter, and I probably put a program a month I take out of the money changer. It's that good, I think. He's at Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. And the zip code there is 38486. Now, if you'd like to call him, the number's toll-free. It's 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226 is the phone number. I'll give you that again before we close today. 85-page manual with the charts and graphs, with the details of the buzzwords, you know, like discounts and calls and puts and shorts and so on, and explains those in the footnotes so that you can understand what you're dealing with and what the risks are. Now, I'm an old man and I don't have time for risks. If I wanted to gamble, I'd go to a casino. But the stock market is a gambling casino, and the bond markets are gambling casinos, and of course gold and silver is like gambling in the casinos. You can do that. You can buy gold stocks. You can buy gold futures or silver futures. Old men don't gamble. So what I do is I buy and take physical possession, and that's what I recommend that you do, and that's what Sanders is recommending. Every gold trader that I know of, and I don't know of any exceptions, will tell you plainly, physicals, physicals, physicals. That's the only thing that we deal in. When I buy, I take physical possession. I got to have it in my grubby little fist. And anything other than that is gambling, because you don't know when you get a piece of paper if that piece of paper is going to be honored. Now, in 1933, the United States government said, give us your gold and we'll give you a piece of paper and we'll redeem this gold at some later date. Or we'll redeem this silver at some later date. And then in 1964, they said, we're not going to redeem those silver certificates. They reneged on their promise. And so the American people got screwed out of their gold in 1933 and screwed out of their silver in 1965. So if you want to trust the United States government, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but the United States government has a history of lies. Politicians are liars. People love it. God, they loved Franklin Roosevelt. That guy, my dad told me, he said, Franklin Roosevelt can sit there and lie to you, and you know he's lying to you, and you love him for it. That's how good he was. Bill Clinton, same thing. Clinton might be a little better than FDR. I mean, after all, it depends on what the meaning of is, isn't it? Or, I didn't have sex with that woman. Now, he says, if I could show you a graph of the gold-silver ratio over the last 4,500 years, it would range from 2.5 to 16 to 1. Now, you can say what you like. That sort of firm long-term ratio is about as coincidental as the number pi. It only climbs above 13.1 after the discovery of the New World with its Cordillerian backbone, the world's richest silver-bearing area. Now, with this article, I've included a graph for the gold-silver ratio since 1792 and several graphs for shorter periods. And you'll notice that it hardly fluctuates before the political demonetization in 1873. And not coincidentally, 1873 ushers in the age of central banks and the worst monetary instability that the world has ever known. Silver may not have been the best money, but it was light years ahead of fiat central bank credit. And the world did not shift from shaky bimetallism to stable gold monometallism, but from stable bimetallism to an inflationary bank credit standard. The gold standard, that term, the gold standard part, was only window dressing to hide the mother lode the banks had struck, and that is the power to create money out of thin air and then legally force the public to accept it. Now, since the victors always write the history books and silver lost the 19th century's bimetallic wars, bimetallism has been luridly portrayed as the cause of horrible monetary turmoil. Likewise, the silly canard still circulates that the cause of bimetallism's instability was a surplus of silver coming onto the market. That's a lie. Nothing could be further from the truth, and the proof of this lies in the ratio of gold and silver after 1848. Silver never saw a single year until 1873, the year of demonetization, in which silver traded as low as 129. That's $1.29, the U.S. statutory price, and a ratio of 16 to 1. 1 ounce of silver equals 1.2929 in gold. In other words, the ratio 1842 to 1873 was always below 16 to 1, and the problem was not a surplus of silver, but in reality a shortage of silver. But even that didn't cause such instability that markets couldn't survive. From 1833 to 1873, that's 40 years, the London price of silver valued in gold ranged from $1.2929 an ounce in 1833 to $1.36 an ounce in 1859. Now that's a gigantic, colossal, gargantuan deviation of 4.86%. Today, currency markets would hardly notice that much change in one day, much less 40 years or four decades. Under today's bank credit standard, the paper dollar that used to buy 1/20th of an ounce of gold today buys about 1/400th of an ounce of gold. Now, we sure did not better ourselves demonetizing silver then, did we? Now, I say it's time to come out of the closet. Another reason why both silver and gold move together. There may be another reason that gold and silver both respond to inflation, and they respond in the same way. They're both money, and they always have been, and they always will be. Everything else is an illusion. It's Alice in Wonderland. There, I've said it. It's out in the open. I've come out of the closet. I believe that only gold and silver are really money, and that everything else in the world is only a money substitute. And I believe that gold and silver will always be money, and neither bank notes nor government notes nor bank credit nor promises to pay nor electrons in bank computers nor electrons on the internet nor digital money nor digital digits nor big sticks nor aircraft carriers nor police truncheons nor Apache attack helicopters or the FBI, FinCEN, or the KGB, no, not even lying federal judges, are ever going to replace gold and silver as money. Now let me close this confession with respectable theoretical explanation. In his anti-silver article, Dr. Gary North mentions that Jim Grant calls gold and silver anti-currencies. Apparently he coined this expression analogically from type, copy, and anti-type original. So I'll forego discussing that delightful nuance and simply remark that this is the only accurate way to grasp how gold and silver work over against fiat currencies. And you might also think of gold and silver as alternative currencies, or more accurate yet, competing monies. And that's why the banks and bankers hate gold and silver with passion, because it's competition to their fiat paper. Stand by. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers, He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our federal constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, it says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, Lyndon Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school. And I conduct that school here twice a year at the law school. To learn more, you can call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, here's an important principle. It's monetary, not industrial demand, that moves silver and gold. So the key to understanding silver and gold is this: it's monetary demand that moves its price. Now, the value of gold and silver never changes. Let me repeat that. The price or the value of gold and silver never changes, because when God finished the creation on the sixth day, all of the gold and silver that was created was put into the earth's crust. There's no more of it today, and there's no less of it today than there was when he finished the creation. What is changing out there in the marketplace is the number of dollar bills, the amount of paper that's in circulation. That's what changes. That's why the price of gold and silver changes every day. So the Bank of England says, "Oh, the price of gold today is $430 an ounce." And tomorrow they say, "Oh, the price of gold today is $420 an ounce." Or the next day they say, "Ah, the price of gold is $400 an ounce." See, that's a value. But the correct price is 16 to 1, or $1.29 if you wanted to price it in dollars. Assuming, of course, that you valued the price of gold at $35 an ounce. So when you place an arbitrary value on the dollars that you're creating out of thin air, when you produce very many of those dollars out of thin air, suddenly there isn't enough gold and silver to go around. And that's why they tell you there isn't enough gold and silver to conduct commerce. Well, that's true. There isn't enough gold and silver to conduct commerce if you're going to have an unlimited supply of paper money, because it takes the same amount of labor to get that gold and silver out of the ground as it did when Adam and Eve were going around in the garden. And it doesn't take any labor to print $100 bills. I mean, once you get that thing cranked up, you just start cranking them out. In other words, you're creating new money. And in 1987, there was $3.5 trillion in paper dollars floating around the world. by 2000 there was $9 trillion, and they're moving that up from 9 to 13.5 trillion by the end of 2005. So it's not the value of gold and silver that's going up, it's the value of the paper money going down. Gold and silver have exactly the same value. 16 ounces of silver equals 1 ounce of gold. And if you can learn that little truth, why then you can start making profit in weights and measures, which is what God told you. And you make that profit based upon everybody else's losses that they make in putting a value on gold and silver and speculating and gambling. So I'll let you gamble, I'll let you speculate, and you run these numbers up and down, and every time you run the numbers up and down, I'll buy and sell based upon your numbers, and I'll end up with more ounces of gold and silver. And that's what this manual is all about. It costs $54, and you can get it from Franklin Sanders, the Money Changer, at West Point, Tennessee, the Post Office Box 178, and the zip code 38486. Now, there's volatility in smaller stock. You see, silver is much more volatile than gold for reasons that I'm going to give you now. The reason that silver is much more volatile means that silver's price varies more than gold's, and that it both rises and falls faster than gold. Now, that's not to say, however, that it's always more volatile in the same direction. You see, silver is much more volatile than gold, because the stock of silver is much smaller than the stock of gold, both by number of ounces and by valuation. Now, that's a shocker. You see, silver is used as an industrial product, and it's used, consumed, and a certain amount of it is lost every year. Gold, when it's mined, gets put into little bars or silver or gold coins, and people put them in their vaults. The gold supply continually increases, the silver supply continually diminishes. There's more ounces of gold today in the vaults and banks and in the houses and the homes and safe deposit boxes of people today than there is silver. And 17.5 times more silver is in the earth's crust. And that's because it's being consumed. So because there are less number of ounces available in the marketplace, when a guy named Buffett comes in and buys 130 million ounces of silver over a 12-month period, or like when the Hunts did that in 1979, it throws the silver market into convulsions. And that's the time to cash in. The silver price is only a fraction of the gold price, about 1/70th right now. Now, available silver stocks. Silver that can be mobilized immediately to be sold are much smaller than gold. And this, together with silver's lower price, means that a given amount of money spent on silver goes much farther than the same amount of money spent on gold. So if Buffett came into the gold market and he spent $1 billion buying gold, it wouldn't change the market at all. You come into the silver market and spend $1 billion and you'll drive the price up by double. And that's what Buffett did. He came in, and I don't think he spent $1 billion. We'll see the numbers here a little later, but I don't even think it took $1 billion to double the price of silver from $3.50 to $7.80. Now, there's about 3 billion ounces of market-available gold stocks, according to the 2003 GFMS Silver Survey. All of the identifiable silver stocks in the world. Now, we're not talking about paper stocks. We're talking about the stockpile, the physical ounces of silver stock in the world at the end of 2002 was 737 million ounces. That included the COMEX stocks, European dealers, governments, and others. And by the way, the CPM Group's silver survey estimates a much lower level of silver stocks. So this is the most optimistic number. That's less than a billion. You haven't even got 750 million ounces of silver in the world available for trade. Now think, to raise the price of 3 billion ounces of gold by one thin Yankee dollar, you'd have to spend $3 billion. Spread instead of the same $3 billion over the 737 million ounces of identifiable silver bullion stocks, and it would raise the price of silver $4. And that's what Buffett did. He came into the silver market. I don't know, remember exactly how much it was. It was several hundred million dollars, $200-$400 million. And he went into the market and started buying silver, taking physical possession of it and moving it. Moved it to London. When he did that, the price of silver doubled in a year. Now that's volatility. Now look at it another way. 3 billion ounces of gold at $400 an ounce amounts to 1,200 billion. That's $1,200 billion. That's the value of the entire ready to come to market gold stock. So if you took all the gold that's out there that could be bought, sold, or traded, it amounts to $1.2 trillion. If you take a look at all of the silver that's out there in the world, $3 billion would buy it all. Got that? $3 billion versus 1,200 billion. Now that's why this silver market's so volatile, and that's why it's so profitable to buy metalists. The secret that Franklin Sanders is writing about here has been available to gold and silver traders for generations. I mean, it isn't something that's brand new. The Hunts have been doing it. Buffett's doing it. See, this guy Buffett bought all this silver. What's he doing? He bought this silver about the year 2000. He bought it for $4 when gold was a $2.75 or less than $300. I mean, this guy scored big. Now he's sitting on this silver stock. He took physical possession. It's sitting over in London right now. And when the market goes down to around, 30, 20 to 1, something like that, he'll trade all that silver for gold. He'll trade his ounces of silver for gold. And people are going to say, well, my God, the price of gold will be $800 an ounce. The hell difference does it make? Mull it over. I don't care if the price of gold goes to $30 million an ounce. All you're talking about is fiat currency. The price of gold and paper will always equal out. The paper at 3 cents per bill. And the gold is always going to equal out to 16 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. Now that's where reality's at. Now you can manipulate it, and governments have been doing that, and the bankers have been manipulating it. And that's where the money's to be made. I'm not manipulating the market. For 4,000 years, the market was relatively stable. The people of the world believed in God, obeyed God, kept His commandments, at least to the degree that they practiced bimetallism. Silver and gold maintained a relatively steady, stable means of monetary value. In other words, when you worked a day and you got paid in gold, you could put that gold in a hole in the ground and come back 50 years from now and take your gold out of the ground and go down to the marketplace and buy the same amount of goods and services you could when you earned the money. Today, look what happens to you. Go out and work and make $10 today. And when you make the $10, go put the $10 in the bank. Or go put it in the top bureau drawer and just leave it sit there. Just leave it sit there for a month or two or three until the price of gasoline goes from $2 to $2.25 a gallon. Then take your $10 out and go down and buy gasoline. And you're going to have about a 10% loss. When the price of gas goes from $2 to $2.25 or $2.30, you got a 10% loss. I pointed that out to you in programs past. In 1930, you could have taken a $20 gold piece and a $20 bill, saved them both for 70 years, and gone into John's suit shop, put the $20 gold piece on the counter, and walked out with the same goods that you could have in 1930. Take the $20 Federal Reserve note in and put it down, and you'll buy just about one necktie. Maybe you can get a shirt, maybe you can't. Now, that's what happens to you when you deal in paper and value. When you deal in weights and measures, which is why the Bible tells you, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, we deal in weights. What the bankers did was that they convinced us that we should convert our gold and silver to value. And that's what they do to this day. So they're valuing gold at $400 an ounce. Gold, $400. They give you this prices every day. So they're taking a fixed weight and they're putting a value on it in fiat paper. The correct way to do that is to value it in silver ounces. And when you do that, and when you trade back and forth, let the people that want to deal in values and weights, let them deal. You just deal weight for weight and convert your ounces to ounces. And every time this market fluctuation occurs, when it goes from 80 to 1 to 60 to 1, you make a 25% profit. And when it goes from 60 to 80, you sit there and ride it. When it gets to 80, you buy in again. See how you do that? You buy high, you buy low and sell high, while everybody else is buying high and selling low. And you'll always be going against the trend. Everybody will always be laughing at you, mocking you, and making fun of you. When people stop laughing at you, mocking you, and making fun of you, you're on the wrong side of the market. And remember that cliche, that the trend is your friend. So right now we're in a bear market for dollars and dollar-denominated assets. Now, next time, I'll show you from the money changer. We'll stay on money, and I'll finish this on gold and silver, and I'll show you what's happening in the real estate market. See, people are buying real estate, and they say, wow, look at the profits we're making in real estate. That's right, and it's all done by value. And people are buying $23,000 houses and selling them for $161,000 and counting $138,000 profit. It's all illusion. It's smoke and mirrors, as old George Bush Sr. said. Smoke and mirrors. Truth of the matter is, there's no profit there at all. And I'll show you in my business school. When you buy a $50,000 house at 6% interest and make 360 payments of $300 each, for 30 years, the net loss is $90,000 in purchasing power every time. There's no money to be made in houses. That's why the brokers take their commissions up front. Inflation erodes it away. The inflation rate from 1960 to 2000 was 4.7% here in the United States. That's the official inflation rate. And those guys always lie. It's probably more like 6, 7, or 8%, but they tell you it's 4.7. So if you just take the number 4.7, you had to be making 4.7% interest every year, compounded annually, from 1960 to 2000, to stand still. Never made a dime's worth of profit on your investments at 5% interest. Now mull that one over in your mind. And all you people out here buying houses and talking about all your profits are in dollars, value, not ounces, weights and measures. It's an important distinction. So now, the reason that silver and gold are so volatile, well, silver is volatile, the gold is pretty stable. Those markets, people are buying and selling in those markets every day. And I don't have anything to do it. Don't get mad at me now because the ratio of gold and silver moves up and down. George Gordon doesn't have anything to do with that. Now, you wouldn't get mad at somebody if he were to buy some Walmart stock tomorrow for $53 and then hang on to it for 6 months and sell it for $60. You wouldn't get mad at him, would you? You'd say, well, gosh, you know, the guy made $7. Subtract out your commissions and inflation and see how much profit you make. Well, then, why would you get upset with me? Because I'm going to sit here and take advantage of you. And then I'm going to go out here and I'm going to take my Federal Reserve notes and buy silver and then wait until the silver ratio moves down 20 points. And when it does, I'm going to convert that to gold. I'm not even going to make the transition to Federal Reserve notes. That's a taxable transaction. I don't want to do that. So then I'll take my gold and I'll hang on to the gold until the ratio moves back up 20 points, and then I'll buy the silver back again. And then when it moves down to 60, and it constantly moves up and down. So why would you get angry with me? Sometimes people will do that. They'll say, well, you know, you're one of them dirty capitalists over here taking advantage of the poor people, taking advantage of the criminals that don't follow the law that says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. When you play with Federal Reserve notes and commercial paper, you're in violation of thou shalt not steal, and therefore there's a penalty to pay, and the penalty is poverty. That's how simple that is. Now, in other words, the world's ready to market silver stock equals 1/3 of 1%. Got that? 1/3 of 1% of the ready-to-market gold stock. There's nearly 300 times as much gold for sale in the world today as there is silver. Now, I didn't make it that way. The truth of the matter is, there's 17.5% more silver in the Earth's crust. And because the bankers have been selling silver short and putting out all these paper silver certificates, got all you people to buy this silver certificates. Now, if you're one of those and you've got pieces of paper in your portfolio, well, now's your chance. You know, nobody's the wiser today. Just convert your paper into physicals and take possession. Now, you want to keep in mind that silver is pretty bulky stuff. Let me show you why. If you were to buy silver today, a bag of silver is going to cost you about $6,000-$7,000. Let's round it off to $8,000. And let's take $100,000. So if you took $100,000, divide that by $8,000. That's 12.5 bags of silver coin. And it weighs 60 pounds to the bag. So it weighs 750 pounds. So $100,000 in silver coin is going to weigh 750 pounds. I'll show you how much gold weighs. Now, you take $100,000, divide that by 430, and you get 232 ounces divided by 12 is 19 pounds. So it's 20 pounds of gold as opposed to 750 pounds of silver. Now you notice I used the number 12 there. And there's 12 troy ounces to a pound. 12 troy ounces. It isn't 16 ounces to the pound, it's 12. And that troy measurement's a little different, but just bear in mind that you're talking about 20 or 25 pounds of gold compared to 750 pounds. You know how much 750 pounds is? Well, if you take a 5-gallon bucket and you fill it with silver, you can't pick it up. 5 gallons of silver, you can't pick up. Of course, you couldn't pick up 5 gallons of gold either, but I'm just pointing out to you that you got to have a place to put this, and your studio apartment in downtown Manhattan is not the place. And this is the problem that people face, and they say, well, I haven't got any place to store it. Well, okay, well, then you shouldn't have it. If you can't store it, can't have it. And that's like buying a car, you know, you got this little studio apartment in downtown Manhattan, and you don't have a place to put your Volkswagen Beetle. Well, I guess you shouldn't have a Volkswagen. You should drive around and ride around on the subway. Now, for the rest of us out here that's got a place to put it, or you can figure out where to store it. Now, remember, there's going to be all these people trying to take it away from you, and if you can't hang on to it, there isn't any need to create it or make it. You got to be able to hang on to it. So, tuck away in your heart now, 750 pounds, that's $100,000. Now, you take that $100,000, that 750 pounds, and you wait until the market moves 20 points in one direction or the other. And that's when you sell for gold, or it's when you sell for silver. Now keep in mind that the physical possession, the cost of moving it, is a part of cost of goods sold. It's just like buying stock for your store. Freight is a cost of goods sold. When you buy that Lazy Boy recliner, that's FOB the factory. And you got to pay yellow freight to move it from the factory to your store. And that's going to cost you $50. That means that you've got to charge an extra $100 to cover freight and profit, cash out of pocket, cost of goods sold. So physical possession is a cost of goods sold. I know the broker is going to tell you, why do you want to take physical possession? You just got to, you know, you got to spend an extra 10% to move the stuff. Just leave it right here in the warehouse and trade the futures. And that's a good plan. That's a good plan. I don't deny that. And so a lot of traders, they're called futures traders. They just buy futures. They'll put 10% down. They leverage themselves into a futures contract for physical delivery of the silver a year from now. And then when the price of the silver or the gold moves in one direction or the other, he sells the piece of paper. Well, again, then you get paid in dollars, and these dollars of profit then are taxable, so let's tuck that one away in your heart. You know, you've got inflation working against you, you got taxes working against you. And then you've been to public school, and that's working against you. So you just tuck those three disabilities into the equation. Pay attention now to Sanders and the manual, and I think you'll see the numbers work out quite nicely. Spend the extra time, effort, and energy. Take physical possession. Put it in your safe spot. And when it comes time to move it, you load it up and you take it into your broker, put it on the counter, and convert it to gold. We got a broker here in Springfield does that. Just load it in your car, take it in, set it on the counter, and say, hey, Bob, trade this into gold for me. He'll do that. He'll trade it into gold. And the next time you come in, you put the gold on the counter and you say, here, trade this into silver. He'll do that for you. And he's going to charge you a fee each time he does that. So you want to make sure that you're getting the best possible price. You don't want to be paying, you know, a discount to get somebody to buy it from you, and you don't want to be paying an excessive premium. Let me talk to you a little bit about premium here while we're closing out here in today's program. The guy came in here the other day and he had silver dollars, American silver dollars, the new ones, 2004 U.S. silver dollars, 480 grain silver. And he paid about $8.50 for them. Well, or maybe it was $9.50, I forgot exactly, but he paid way more than a silver bar would have cost. Now, he had 20 ounces of silver here and he handed this tube to me. Now, let's take 20 times 850. In Federal Reserve notes, that's $170. So he put out 170 frog skins on the counter, walked out with these $20. 20 ounces of silver. Now, silver sells for $7.39. The other day it was selling for $7.39. So he paid an extra, you know, if it was $7.50, then he paid an extra $20 for those 20 silver dollars versus silver rounds. He could have had 20 silver rounds for $150 instead of $170. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about premium. So when you've got a premium to pay, you want to pay the smallest premium possible, not the most. All right, we're about out of time, so we're going to have to break off right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by The Law School. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page. It's on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, there's the signal. My time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, adios. Good night, friends.